Good afternoon, Australia, and good evening, America. You're joined this afternoon by Tony Lontis and Tracy Horton, and you're on Radio Tony, Tackling Trauma with Tracy and Tony. A big shout out to everyone who's listening and watching on live stream, LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook. We appreciate your company today. And for those of you listening from America, happy Thanksgiving Eve. As you probably know, we don't celebrate Thanksgiving in Australia, but I kind of think it would be a nice time of year to have a Thanksgiving celebration. If ever there was a year to be thankful that it's almost over, that would be 2020 without a doubt. So just a reminder that you can connect with either of us on radiotony.com. If you look for co-host, you will find all of Tracy's information, how to connect with her, how to buy her book, and how to link with all the wonderful work that she does. We have also available for those listening who might be suffering from any sort of trauma, we have a downloadable trauma workbook available free, and you just need to go to the radiotony.com website and look under co-host for that information. A reminder too that we are not psychologists, but we have decades of experience in healing and dealing with trauma. Tracy in particular has over 30 years of experience in helping people work through their life and live the life that they want to live. The stuff that we talk about in this show may trigger some of you, and I ask you today to make sure you reach out and talk to someone if anything that you hear today causes you discomfort in any way. So let's get on with the show. Good afternoon, Tracy.
Good afternoon, Tony. Happy Thanksgiving. And America, I hope
Thank
you have a great
you.
Day tomorrow. But also, Tony, it's 30 days to Christmas.
Well, I know. What's with that?
It's getting a bit exciting. Hope Santa started my present. I've got a big order in this year. I want longevity and I want to lose weight. So good luck with that, Santa.
I know, Tracy and I were talking at the start of the show, and we're just like, it seems like it's racing towards Christmas at breakneck speed. And I'm sure that I feel this way every time, every year at this time of year, but I'm actually really feel a little like I'm limping into Christmas, like, thank God I've made it through 2020. And I'm quite sure there's probably a lot of other people feeling the same way, don't you think, Trace?
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. It's been a huge year on every front. I haven't met anyone yet that hasn't had an abnormal year. So I think that people are in two camps. I think some of them just want the year to end, and I think some of them are thinking, you know what, we're going out with a bang. Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, they're all going to be bigger than ever before.
Yeah, yeah. So these series of shows have been talking about all things trauma, and just to recap, we've been talking about trauma in terms of triggers. And so trauma is anything, is a response, is a physical and mental response to something terrible, like an accident, a natural disaster, an assault, an accident, anything that puts you into the space where you feel shocked and your emotions become unpredictable. You suffer from flashbacks or strained relationships, and you might that might include a plethora of physical symptoms as well. We've been speaking extensively about triggers, and we want to continue a little bit on that subject today, because a trigger is a response, such as a smell, a sound, or something that triggers you to relive that traumatic experience. And for many people coming into this time of year, Thanksgiving and Christmas will be filled with triggers. And so today I wanted Tracy to start off and talk about what some of those triggers look and feel like, particularly in relation to Thanksgiving and Christmas time. It's a holiday season, but for some people, this is one of the toughest times of the year. So, Trace, let's talk about some of those triggers, particularly from a childhood trauma perspective.
This is a great subject, Tony, because we are so conditioned within the American and Australian culture to have a family connection. It is just, it's inbred in us. And we have these events that come up which tell us that if we're valuable, we'll have a lot of family. If we've done it, you know, you and I are at that age now where if we've done our job right, all the kids are going to come home. And when that's not the case, when you're somebody who doesn't want to be around your family, or in my case, I'm a mum who isn't going to have all her children come home this year because one of my daughters has decided to disconnect with us considerably. These opportunities front up for us to actually work out how we truly feel. So what I say to all my clients that are coming up to this time, and some of them don't want to see granddad, some of them don't want to go to, I always say to them, what do you want? What do you want? Because in our culture, we have so much external expectation that sometimes we forget to internally connect. Wouldn't you agree, Tony?
Absolutely agreed. And Tracy and I, we've shared of this year, and that includes the estrangement from daughters. So I'm in the same boat as Tracy coming into Christmas. My daughter has decided to step away from close connection with the family, and I absolutely support her decision to do that, but it just makes Christmas that bit harder. And the thought that I'm not going to see my only grandchild this year is causing me a little bit of angst, I have to say.
Oh, sure.
So, Tracy, let's talk to the audience about how you manage some of these traumatic situations and the triggers they bring. Because I know for myself, on Christmas Day, I'll be wondering what my grandchild is doing and if he's indeed having a wonderful day. I'm sure he will be, but I will certainly miss him on Christmas Day.
Oh, of course you will. And I've got three grandchildren I'm not seeing, and I'll miss them terribly. I think, Tony, the most important thing is for us to understand that at these moments we are presented with both an ability to be really reflective and to hold some nice natural energy around, just like you said, just releasing and supporting your daughter, knowing that they're safe and that they're having a Christmas, sending them your love, hoping that on Christmas morning they feel it, reaching out with a text or whatever's appropriate, but also at the same time remembering that this is still an event you need to celebrate. This is still a moment for you. This is still one of the Christmases of your story and your life. And that was really difficult for me in the first part of my journey because I took so long to heal. I didn't want to see a lot of my family.
Yes.
And so I would get up on Christmas morning. I'd be living away from home. I'd get up on Christmas morning and I would just start to go on a downward spiral knowing I had to see them. And I think I wouldn't be the only person that had been drinking or done other stuff to make yourself get through that lunch. And the challenge and the change for me came when one year I just thought, what am I doing? It's okay to actually say I'm not going to come this year. And you know, Tony, the thing that breaks my heart most is that so many people put up the bravado to make sure it still looks right, and you can't heal at that moment. Sometimes the best gift you can give your family is actually saying, you know what, we're just not going to do it this year. You know what, I'm not going to come. Because that actually gives, that's bold love. When we fake it, we're not loving people. We're just keeping up the bravado. But there's no love. And when there's no love, there's no healing.
Yeah. I know, Tracy, that decision to separate yourself from a family gathering where you have always gone to those family situations and all of a sudden you're not going to those situations anymore, and you've made that decision because it's in your best interests to stay away and allow and not have to confront those difficult members of the family that not only trigger you, but you feel like you have to put that face on. You feel like you have to pretend that everything's okay, and you feel like that you something that you should be looking forward to with enjoyment. You find yourself dreading the thought of spending a number of hours in the company of these people because you cannot be yourself, because you can't speak about what you want to speak about, because you can't be who you want to be. And I realized that you can't do that long term. It eventually causes you disease. It eventually causes you sickness within yourself. And to come to that decision, particularly if it's around Christmas or Thanksgiving, is incredibly difficult. And I just want to remind listeners that at the end of the day, walking through this life is you. And you only have one life, and it's your life. Why would you spend it doing things that make you feel so incredibly terrible about yourself and about the situation? And this, as simple as it sounds, it's still incredibly difficult to do in real life. I know, because I've done it. Tracy knows, because she's done it. But when you make that decision and you do step away, it allows you to breathe. And it allows you to heal. And that's part of what we wanted to talk about today, is once you start healing, you have to protect that healing. You have to protect yourself and start to put yourself first and foremost. You're not responsible for how other people react. You're not responsible for their healing or their lives. The only thing you're responsible is for your life and your healing. And if you've done that work and gone down that healing track, you know how hard you've worked to become whole again. So you want to protect that as if it's precious. And Tracy, that's from your perspective, you had to do that, make that difficult decision as well, didn't you?
I did. And, you know, I am, my business and everything I do is all about reconciliation, you know, working things through and healing. But here's the thing. If we don't admit that something's going on, you can never heal it. So for me, I did years and years of fronting up in my false self at my Christmas parties with my family. And because I was in false self, because I was in a protective mode, I was looking for the fight. I was looking for that moment I could just keep talking about something nobody else would talk about. I was protecting myself. They all reacted to the false self. So it just went round and round in a spiral. And when I sat down one year and thought, you know what am I doing? Because I just got married to Paul and he was like, what are we doing? This isn't even fun.
Yeah.
Your family's weird. Yes. They're different throughout the year. Let's not do it. Let's just you and me go away. And I thought, wow. And what happened was I could then stay in true self instead of false self. And so I actually had a really lovely day and worked out that Christmas didn't have to be angry. And while I am all about reconciliation, as you know, my whole mantra is about people reconciling and being restored. There is a time when sometimes you have to say, you know what, if we're not going to have this conversation, I'm not coming to Christmas. We've now got 365 days to have the conversation till next year, you know. And I think especially around a time, you know, people were giving me presents and I was unable to appreciate them because I was so hurt.
Yeah.
I was giving dumb gifts because I was hurt. I wasn't able to be in my true self, which is a really kind, generous person. I wasn't being anything like it. And it just got really horrible. And no one talked about it. We all just endured it. And we endured it because of the cultural belief that we all had to be together. And when I called it, one of my cousins called it, and then all of a sudden people started differentiating. And it was uncomfortable for some of the older people because our culture is all about gathering. As a Polynesian culture, it's all about gathering. And it's very disrespectful to the elders when you won't attend. But actually it really freed me and it enabled me to go back a couple of years later with Paul in a really true way. Yes. And then all of a sudden I found my place because we'd had the conversations. And I think the worst thing is if you go to these events at these monumentous times where there's high on emotion and you break out into an argument or a fight over the conversation you should have had in August.
Yes. I don't know what it is about Christmas and holiday time that increases everyone's anger and angst, but I think that for some family dynamics, that once a year get together is just not a good thing. It's not a good idea. And once you remove yourself from that, you give yourself the space to then show up, as Tracy says, your real and whole self. I've been listening to, I think I've spoken on here before, I've been listening to Glennon Doyle's book, Untamed. And she talks, has a significant conversation about challenging our ideas of what a family looks like. And rather than using culturally determined ideals that it's a man, woman, and children, what if we challenged those ideals and created what was right for us versus right in comparison to what society deems is right? She talks a lot about determining what works for you and doing that versus taking society's norms and trying to make them work for you. So for me, I've never really felt like I wanted to conform to society in terms of what I was, who I was, and what I had to say. I've always felt that I was a little different, that I thought about things a little different, and it took me until my mid-50s to discover that that's okay. I was made that way for a reason, and I have learned to embrace that about myself, but it still comes back at those family holidays. I'm still reminded that I need to sit down, shut up, be quiet, and not have an opinion. And so removing myself from having to be put in that spot has been very healing for me. And I now know that if I needed to go back into those situations again, I would go back to them feeling more empowered, more healed, and stronger. And so whilst we're talking about trauma and healing, healing as in my own story and in Tracy's story, it took many, many years. And we've talked briefly about the fact that you need to protect that healing. So I thought today that it was probably important that we talked about what healing looks like so that you have some gauge to measure how you're going. And every one of us will be at different parts of this process. And I believe that healing is ongoing and will go on until the day I die. I link healing with self-development, self-awareness, and self-knowledge. And there would be very few individuals that are completely and absolutely self-aware and healed within our society today. Would you think, Tracy?
I think the ones that are healed and self-aware understand being teachable and continuously healing is a lifestyle. I know for me, I had so much taken from me at such a young age. To this day, I wake up and address mindsets every now and then. Not every day, but every now and then. I know that I guard myself, I watch myself, I watch my behaviours, because I don't believe when you've been through trauma like we have and some of the listeners have been through, you don't get, because trauma arrives unannounced. That's our big deal, right? We always say it, Tony, it arrives unannounced and it's got nasty baggage.
Yep.
So because of that, it's not like you get to just say, okay, today it left. It doesn't ever leave the way it arrives. And so you have to get over it. You have to get through it. You have to get past it. And that takes a long time. And I think for me, I always say I had a butterfly moment where really the best thing I ever did was actually cocoon out of my world and into the healing that it was available to me. And I can think of several times I did like an 8-week course and I stopped going out, I stopped drinking, I stopped dating, I just stopped all that stuff. And I just really was like I'd gone into a cocoon. And I often think I'm the woman I am today because I gave myself permission for those moments to just be really Because healing is always my responsibility. Healing is your responsibility. If I hurt you, that's my issue that I've hurt you, but your issue is to heal from
it. It's how you deal with it. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So for our listeners, again, I just want to reiterate that that this is not a one size fits all scenario. Healing is different for different people, and the stages are different and the processes are different. But some of the things that you can assess yourself on is that you get better at naming your feelings. So for instance, you know that if you are in a certain environment, it's going to mean that you will feel like this. And the ability to name that feeling and attach it to something that you understand is a good sign that you're well on the way to healing. Another one of those things is to be able to know that when things go wrong, you don't automatically blame yourself. So this was a big one for me. I don't know about you, Trace. Was that a big one for you to know that things go wrong and it's not your fault and it's not always your fault?
I think every childhood trauma, that's really big for, because children can't, they perceive, they don't receive, they can't receive logic. Under the age of 12, we can't receive logic and live in it. We perceive our feelings. So when you're hurt under 12 years of age, that's a big one for anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's once you start becoming aware of that, you can know that you're well into your healing process. I found when I was researching for this session today, I actually found these 12 things like really helpful, because you go into your healing and there's not a lot of information about how you're doing. And if we could have these 12 items to help people guide them to know, okay, well, yeah, I can do that. Yes, I'm doing that. Yes, I feel that way. Might help people understand where they are in that healing process and whether they need to give themselves a bit more time, they need to protect themselves a bit more, or they're doing really, really well. One of the other things, number three, is that you don't automatically second guess yourself. And so that's around the concept of self-confidence. So you actually feel confident in your decisions and the decisions that you make. So you don't keep going backwards and forwards. You make a decision, you're confident in that decision, and you go forth with that decision. And you know that at the end of the day, it was the right decision for you. So it's about self-confidence. And when that starts to come back into your life, you know that you're on the right healing track. I know for me, that was one of the last things in my healing process, and one that I still work on, is my self-confidence. I do find it a struggle. I do tend to second guess myself, but I'm getting better. It's like a muscle, don't you think, Tracy, that the more that you practice some of these things, the better you become at them? Do you feel that way with self-confidence?
Yeah, absolutely. Around decision making, I always say to my clients, there's only one decision you ever have to hesitate on, and that's end of life. If you're turning off somebody's machine or you're making a decision to euthanize yourself, for goodness sake, please hesitate. But every other decision is not life or death. Every other decision actually is just going to have a ripple effect in your river of life that you can control. So don't be afraid to make decisions, because we all make a lot every day. We make a decision when we're having coffee, and we make them all subliminally. We make a decision about whether we're going to do this show for 4 years or 1 month. We make a decision about what we eat and drink, what cars we drive, what clothes we wear. And we make them all. We're actually really good decision makers, because you can't be an adult without being good at decisions, because otherwise you and I would still be in our pajamas in bed today. So, you know, most of us have made probably 100 successful decisions. Yes. So don't hesitate on them. Trust yourself and give it a go, because unless it's end of life, there's still room to move. And I think for me, I have always said, and I say this to all of my clients, you know, the greatest teacher for me was failure. It's been the best teacher, because it's kicked me in the butt every time, and every time I've learned, because that kick I don't want twice. So I think it's not those moments when I stood up and I was like, whoa, overnight success. It was those moments where I was like, well, okay, I've learned now. You know, my best teacher, my favorite teacher is definitely failure, because I actually learned so much about myself and unpacked all the preconceived stuff. And so, you know, decision making, just back yourself, because you're way more confident than you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The next one I found was about you're able to speak up without worrying. Again, that was a big one for me, because I'd spent a lifetime of feeling unworthy and that what I spoke was something that I shouldn't speak about. So, and for trauma and those that have had trauma, this can also be a big one for you. You're worrying about talking about your trauma, you're worrying about speaking up about that trauma. Let me tell you that once you speak up, it ceases to have power over your life. Speaking up and the ability to speak up without worrying what other people think is a powerful thing. And you know that you've done a good job with your healing when you start to be able to speak without that fear of worrying. For both Tracy and I, it's something that we've had to learn how to do. We've had to learn how to speak up, how to do that, and how to be, and how to not worry about what other people might think and say, because we started to believe in our own message that it was far more important than our fear or our worry around speaking up. Did you find that too, Tracy?
Yeah, look, I'm a huge believer that when we can be honest, first with ourselves and then with our community, we affect change. We do. We just affect change. But we both know trauma is very uncomfortable, and it always comes with the depth of grief and sadness and anger. All the emotions we're taught to see as negative, I don't always see them as negative personally, but we're taught to see them as negative. And so because of that, we shy away thinking granddad's going to yell or mum's going to yell or my brother's going to walk and storm out again, or, you know, even whether it's around the loss of a child or abuse or DV or lying and cheating and stealing and whatever, you know, whatever it is, drug addictions, whatever it is, we're taught to avoid negative because we don't really know how to handle it. And so I think, you know, when you are the person with the trauma, you learn very quickly to not say anything. You know, for me, I was talking about sexual abuse in the late 70s when places like government agencies, nothing was around. People were like, what are you talking like that for? You're a woman. Don't talk like that. That's not a nice thing.
Yes.
You know, it's only, I mean, I've got grandchildren going to school now, and it's only now in Australia in 2020 that we're using the correct anatomical words for a person's body. Up until, you know, my kids went to school, you know, 12 years ago, and they weren't using them then. Like, it's only now. And I think, you know, we really do need to understand that it is going to be hard to talk about. But again, bold love is when we say, I honour you, Tony, enough to tell you the truth. I honour you enough to be real in your presence.
Yeah.
And I need you, and that's my invitation for you to heal me and love me as I am.
Absolutely. That the whole concept of owning your own voice and telling your own story is an important part of any trauma healing. And so it's one of the key things you can recognize when you can start to tell your story, when you can start to speak about it. And I'm not necessarily saying speaking about it in a big public arena like Tracy and I are at the moment. I'm actually talking about at a ground level. You're talking to someone about your particular trauma, and that ability to speak about it without worry and fear is important. The other thing that you might find that happens is that you are less sensitive to rejection and slights, and you're less triggered by those things. Once you reach that point, it's a wonderful feeling when you're not triggered by, for me, that's often around men and arrogant men in particular. That's my particular sensitive, reactionary space. It's going to be different for everyone, but you can be guaranteed and sure that your healing is on the right track when those things cease to cause a physical reaction in your body. Now, some of the things that trigger you after trauma may continue for the rest of your life, but at some point, if you're doing your healing and working with someone to get through the process of your healing, they will cease to have so much power over you. And Tracy, you would know from your decades of experience that that is true, that the more you heal, the less it has an impact on your life.
Absolutely. But I also think that we need to remember that healing is raw. It's a raw material. And, you know, Tony, on this show, we're talking to people that have lived through stuff they shouldn't have lived through. You know, this,
yes,
the reason you and I got together over coffee one day and said we got to do this show is because people were, yeah, fronting up to us with loss of children, loss of loved,
yes,
ones, living with addicts,
yes,
DV, shut down. I know decent people that have lived a decent life that this year have gone bankrupt because of a stupid,
yes,
virus that none of us had any control over. You know, so we,
yep,
are talking to and with people that have lived through stuff they had no right to live through. Depth of,
yeah,
hurt and hatred that doesn't belong,
yes,
on any human. So you know what?
Yeah.
It's okay if that's uncomfortable for a little while. I had 12 men take away from me an innocence that no daughter, no woman, no child deserved to,
yeah,
lose. If I get triggered now, it's okay. It's okay, because that's,
absolutely,
not a fun story. Now, I don't get triggered very easily, and my husband always laughs because he says, "Trace, you could pick a pedophile at 40Ks. I said, "I could," because they all have a very similar thing, let me tell you.
They but have what, an energy, don't they, Tracy? There's an
what,
energy. Yeah.
But I want our listeners to know that if you still get triggered and on your journey to healing, it's actually okay, because what caused you to be listening to the show, what caused you to be listening, is a big deal. And it's
absolutely
going to take time. It's going to take time. My grandson has autism, and there's not 1 minute of the day we expect him to live anything but autistically. And it's been such a lesson for me in life, because I work with women who have got stories deeper than mine. And it breaks my,
yeah,
heart. And I think, you know what? I don't expect you to be anything else than your glorious, repaired self, your healing,
absolutely,
self, you know. And it is time for us to really take some restraints off ourselves and just know that it's okay. It's okay.
Yes. It's those self-soothing words in your mind that you say to yourself that will get you through each day, rather than that the negative self-talk that just takes you down into a rabbit hole that's hard to get out of. So instead of being horrible to yourself, start talking to yourself as you would a small, precious child. You're okay. It's going to be okay. Everything's going to be all right. Yep. Feels pretty yucky right now. Yep, feels pretty horrible right now, but you are going to be okay. It is going to be okay. This is a gift. You'll work your way through it. You are strong. All those positive things that you can say within your own mind script and within your own mind, they all help. And that leads me into what we've talked about earlier, was around boundary setting. You know that you're on a healing track when you find that you can set boundaries that make your life a bit easier. One of those boundaries might be around not attending each and every family situation because you know it's not going to be a fun time. It might be around who you allow in and around your life. So the thing is, I'll go back to that same saying, Trace, you've got one life. Why spend it with people who don't value you, who don't respect you, and who don't allow you to speak your truth? It's your life. Take control of it. Set those boundaries. they don't have to be boundaries that are set in stone from now until forever, but they may need to stay there temporarily till you get to a point where you feel that you can engage with those people or that situation again on your own terms. There's a difference between being in a situation and having everyone else's terms, and being in a situation and it's on your own terms. So Tracy, that whole idea that you are putting yourself in the center is a really important thing to grasp in healing from trauma, isn't it?
It is, because until the day you back yourself, you will be at everybody else's beck and call. You know, I would make decisions during my healing and people would say, "What? Why are you doing that? Why are you being so strong with your boundaries?" And I felt like saying, "I've been living all your boundaries. I've just chosen one for myself. It's only that mine disagrees with yours that you're even bringing it up. Don't say I'm the only one with a boundary. We all have boundaries. Mine just is a little different to yours right now because I need it to be selfish for 2 months, or I need it to be about me for 6 months, or I need it, you know, to be reframed so I can be comfortable in your presence again." And I think that, you know, when people are suffering trauma, we are so susceptible to being the wrong ones. We're so susceptible to it being all our fault. We're so susceptible to, "Oh my goodness, Tracy, are you making this about you again?" Well, I have to make it about me if I'm going to heal. I just do. That's the truth. And you should never feel guilty about that, because I can testify, and I see it in your life too, Tony. When you make it about yourself to get healed, it very quickly, once you're healed, is never about you again. And that is a beautiful place to live. And we need more humans like that than ever before.
And it's part of the reason why Tracy and I wanted to do this show, to show you what you can achieve in your own life. And we are taught from an early age that making yourself front and center is selfish. Guys, it's never selfish to value your own life, your own story, and your own healing, because no one else is going to do it. If you don't gift yourself self-love, self-awareness, self-understanding, you're never going to be in a position where you'll move forward in your life. It starts with you, doesn't it, Tracy? It has to start with you. No one else is responsible for you and your healing but you. And in gaining that healing, if you have to set those strong boundaries around you, then you must do it, because the healing won't happen until you do that. Yeah?
And we're one of a kind, right? No two people are the same. You and I walk into a supermarket, it gets held up, we react differently, even though we teach a lot of the same stuff, even though we're around the same age, even though we come from the same culture and the same country, we will react differently, purely because our personalities are different, our thought processes are different. I could have a trigger from some of the stuff that's happened to me young that you don't have. So the thing is, if I don't actually start dealing with me, I'm the only person who actually knows how to do it. And if I don't work out, okay, I need Tony's book because that book is going to speak to the way I hear, or I need this process, or I need this process. Because one of the first things I do when people come to see me is I get them to work out who they truly are and how they want to do this. Because for me, I needed to do things with strong people that would give me a go. I wanted to fight this out. I had been suppressed. I had been downtrodden. I was not looking to sit in a group and go, "Oh, okay, sure." I wanted one-on-one. I wanted to fight this. You tell me. You give me a reason. I was working with people saying, "I can't give you a reason. You got to find that." And I was like, that was how I needed it. But, you know, I've got a friend who did it very differently. She just locked herself away and read books and still found her healing. Because if we're one of a kind people, which we can all agree that we are, how can we expect someone else to know what to give us if we don't work it out first?
Yes. And part of what Tracy's work is so powerful in doing is helping you discover that. So she won't give you the answer, but she will help you get the answer yourself. And sometimes it's just an outside person who can lead you, but ultimately it's a knowing within your soul. So you know, if you listen to yourself in a quiet place, you will have a knowing about what works for you. And that's what you need to stick to. That's what you need to have confidence in, is that knowing within your soul about what's right for you. And then that starts to you seeing yourself as a whole person again. Because when you're in trauma, you often feel like you're broken in a thousand pieces, and there's one bit way over there and one bit way over there, and you don't feel very whole or functional. And part of knowing that you're healing or healed is that feeling that you feel whole again, or you feel put back together again. I know that happened for me a fair way along the track, but I can actually say to you now live, I actually feel whole again. And I know that Tracy feels the same. It didn't happen overnight. Like, it didn't happen without hard work and retrospection and looking inwards and doing the work around it. But to feel whole again versus feeling fractured is an amazing feeling, isn't it, Trace?
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point, Tony, because trauma comes in an instant. One minute you're this and the next minute you're that. It transforms you in a moment. So we walk around thinking, okay, so we're going to be able to fix that in a minute. But as you know, the leg breaks in a minute and then the cast heals it for 8 weeks. You know, so yes. It's the same with trauma. You have that moment where your life has changed forever, and it breaks my heart every time when I hear those stories, I've just got to say. That defining moment, and it's like, but in actual fact, once you get to that moment, you need to go in the cast. You need to go into that emotional cast for however long it took. And to be honest with you, Tony, it probably took me 12 years. I was probably in a cast for some part every year for 12 years because I just, it was too much to deal with at once. One cast was not going to fix all the fractures, all the blood clots, all the issues that had come about from my trauma, my break. There was just too many, and there was ones I couldn't even have seen. There was the initial trauma that I was so busy dealing with, the fractured parts, the bone fragments, and all the stuff that cast over 12 years found and healed, I could never have known. And I think that's a really important point, is that, yes, trauma comes in an instant, and it changes your life in a moment, and most of us can remember the time and date. But the healing, just like a break of a leg, has to happen in a cast, and that will take time.
Yes. And for some people, it may take longer than that. So for some people, it can take decades of healing. We don't want you to be tough on yourself because your healing process is less or longer than anyone else's. You heal at your own pace, and if that takes decades, then it takes decades. Takes weeks, months, years, that's also okay. But it needs to be, as trauma affects us uniquely, so our healing is unique and the process of that healing is unique. The other thing that happens once you've gone down that healing track is you no longer feel ashamed that your story and your trauma ceases to have any shame around it. That's a sure thing that you're going along a-okay and that you've started to work through the issues around your particular trauma. So the ability to not feel ashamed anymore is a big one. Another thing that you might notice is that you start to have the ability to set goals in and around your life. Again, another thing for me, I in my corporate and health industry, I was easily able to set goals. When I had my breakdown, there were no goals. I could barely set a goal to get out of bed at a certain time of a morning. goal setting was the furthest thing that I was able to do. And that was almost instantaneous and around my particular trauma. But as you start to heal, you start to go, okay, well, I'm going to practice going for a walk every second day. And your goals may start out as small things, but the fact that you can set goals for yourself, that's evidence that healing is happening in your life. The other thing that starts to happen is that you start to recognize specific emotions and how you manage those emotions. So a big one for me is rage. It was rage and anger. I could rage at the world at the drop of a hat. And that was a big process that I had to learn how to manage. So, Tracy, what were one of the emotions, the big emotions, that you learned how to manage throughout your healing?
I guess it was anger-based because, you know, like I teach, anger and grief are emotions that show up to tell us something else is going on. They're masking emotions. You can't have them without something else going on. So for me, because rejection was a really big deal for me, I felt really rejected from a really young age. I truly didn't believe I mattered. I really didn't. So early on into any relationship, but especially in my marriage, the fact that my husband stayed the first 2 years, I was really good at self-sabotage. I would really sabotage things that were going great for me. I was really good at picking at them, at unraveling them, at pushing them to a breaking point. And I can remember one day my husband saying, I love you, but if you don't want me to live with you, then that's your choice. And I remember thinking, how did he get there? And then when we talked about it, I thought, well, I need to go and see somebody because I really don't want to live without this guy. And so, you know, like for me, there was all of that stuff, you know, self-sabotaging, high level of sarcasm, all my walls up, couldn't, you know, just all that stuff. And it's all part of the journey. And I always say to people that come to see me, it doesn't matter. As long as you're aware of it, it's when you're lying to yourself. It's the only time it matters. And I think for me, when I stopped lying to myself and said, you know what, I'm a really cold, hard, manipulating woman, and I'm actually like that because it's helping me right now. It's actually my defense mechanism to survive right now. Yes. I could actually take the power away, but I actually took ownership to start dealing with it when the time was right, which I did, because I'm nothing like that now.
That self-awareness and looking within yourself is a very powerful process. It's pretty uncomfortable in that space when you start looking at yourself, warts and all. But once you start doing that and doing it in a loving manner, like not in a beat you up, how bad are you manner, I'm talking about looking in, looking at whatever it is that is, particularly with self-sabotage, because behind self-sabotage is that feeling of rejection, that low self-esteem and lack of worthiness. Those things sit directly behind self-sabotaging. And I'm talking about self-sabotage within relationships, like purposely going out of your way to fight with your loved one. That's self-sabotage. If you're purposely geared to fighting with them for no particular reason, that's self-sabotage. And behind that self-sabotage is usually a trauma and based on feelings of rejection and unworthiness. And so looking inwardly, looking at yourself honestly and getting help with working on those things is a wonderful thing, but you need to be gentle with yourself as well.
Definitely. And not always gentle, but always honest. You know, I think sometimes I've had to be really tough on myself, to be honest. But I think just being real and, you know, because I've married a man who comes from a beautiful home where he's never heard his parents argue, and they're just had 60 years of marriage, and they are as happy as kids in a playground. And I think, you know, sometimes I've had to say to myself, you know what, it's okay you react differently to him. It's actually okay. The stories are really different. Yes. And don't make it about you. Don't make a scene. But it's okay right now that something's going on in you that's not going on in him. You know, so I think sometimes it doesn't matter whether it's soft or hard, but you always got to be really honest and real with yourself. Because when you are, that is your point of healing. The minute you can get real, you'll heal. Guaranteed. It's a process, has to take place.
And it happens gradually over time. And as you heal and enter that higher level of healing, it becomes a bit easier. But don't be disillusioned that Tracy and I go through life and not having to challenge ourselves on a regular basis. We do. And if we don't, there'll be someone else out there who will readily point out this particular thing that we are displaying at a particular moment. I know Tracy and I have had many discussions about things that other people have said, and that we've had to sit and go, is that really true? Is that something that I need to work on? Is that the best person I can be? And sit with it and go, okay, yeah, that element is true, but maybe that other element is actually untrue. When you can get to that point where you can like sit with things, pull them apart and work out what you need to do to fix it and discard the rest, you know that you're on the right track. And that's a good place to be as a human being, because it encourages you to keep striving towards living your best life. And again, you've only got one life. You only got one go at this. Why not give it a red hot go? So, Tracy, I've just looked at the time and thought, oh, my God, we've talked straight through another program. I'm going to hand over to you. I'm wishing everyone listening live today a wonderful Thanksgiving in America. And my last 1 minute goes to the gorgeous Tracy Horton.
You know, it is Thanksgiving tomorrow and we are 30 days out from Christmas. So can I just tell you that the best gift you could give yourself would be to download our trauma ebook. For goodness sake, this holiday season, no matter where you're at, whether you're still pretending, whether you're still holding space for others who can't come to terms with you, whether you've made the disconnection, whatever it is, do yourself a favor. And if you don't have the money to work with somebody, at least get our free ebook. At least download something. Yes. That can comfort you, that can exhort you, that can help you, that can teach you, that can get you onto the right process. Because until the day comes that you decide that you're important enough to deal with it, everybody else is going to mistreat you. And that will break my heart. So this Thanksgiving and this Christmas, make sure you give yourself the most important gift of all, which is saying, you know what? I matter too. It has been our pleasure today to talk to you, and I wish you all a beautiful evening.
Thank you, everyone. This is Tony Lontis with Tracy Horton and Radio Tony, and we will be back next week with another show. Over to you, TJ, and bye for now, everyone. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Bye.